I'm getting my hair cut the other day, Brad, right? And it's standard. I'm super cheap, so I go to Supercuts. And
thank God you said that, because I'm a master cut man myself.
Master cut sounds classier than Supercuts, though. Master cut sounds like there's a butler holding the scissors on a little silver platter.
Mr. Geiger, your master cut is ready, sir.
Your number 5 clippers, sir.
And will you be having the standard old man cheap haircut, sir?
Yes,
fantastic.
I will.
Fantastic, sir. Right this way. Wonderful, wonderful. Anyway, so I'm getting the standard haircut, and all of a sudden, the very kind woman says to me, would you like your ears trimmed? And I said, wait, what? And I immediately am thinking, wait, the sort of ear canal, like, is that what she's talking about?
Yeah.
And I go, I just out of curiosity, because why not try it in life? I said, sure, go ahead, trim my ears. And she takes the clippers, the little brrr things, yeah, whatever those are called, and she runs it along the outer edge of my ear, like along...
You got fur there?
And so, like, am I becoming an old man that's getting, like, radio antennas on his ears? Is that what's happening? No one's told me in my life?
Gloria's never advised you about your earlobe fur?
She is very clear that I need to always keep my neck clean. She's very big on having a clean neck. But she has never mentioned anything about me suddenly being able to pick up 98.7 on my ears radio. So I don't know what even to make about that. Was that just a woman that was like, well, I'm just going to look out for this guy and do his ears? Or are my ears legitimately weird and no one has told me after all these decades?
No,
I don't know.
You're getting old, just like me. I had a lady at Mastercuts do the exact same thing, but with my eyebrow hair.
And, oh, God.
And it was like, because I hadn't realized it, because you don't look at yourself that clearly in the, at least I don't, in the mirror every morning. And I had these sprouts that were coming out, literally like antennas, and she just took them right off. It's not like she separated a unibrow, but my eyebrows had gotten like out of control. And I get home and my wife looks at me and she says, she did something about those eyebrows, didn't she?
Oh, my God. I love that, of course, the women in our life would be like, oh, thank God. Yeah, geez, got rid of that caterpillar on your forehead.
She's much too nice to ever say anything about it, you know. And to be honest with you, she's a full-time mom and works for herself and all this other stuff. She's got much more important fish to fry than my eyebrow hair. But get this, a 15-year-old Brad would be so excited. I'm finally getting chest hair. We're laying in bed the other night, and I've got my shirt off, and my wife goes, oh my God, you're getting chest hair. And I said, no. I looked down at myself and I said, no, you're saying it wrong. I'm getting chest hairs. when it's just 3 sprouts, you don't say chest hair like you've got a grove of fur down there. I had 3 little sprouts between my nipples.
When you can name them, it's not chest hair.
Yes. Oh God! But I had nothing there for so long, and when you're 15, I mean, that's all you want is body hair.
Sure, I guess. I don't know.
I lived in Michigan. I needed the heat.
Yeah, that's true. Like, why is Brad shivering? Oh, that poor boy.
He's a hairless.
Still prepubescent. But what is it about hair that, like, you get, like, a hair on an ear, like, it's done its best for decades, and then all of a sudden it says, I did my best, I'm tired, I'm going to grow to be 7 inches long. Like, what happens? Why does the body do that?
And why can't that happen on the back of my head where my bald spot is receding so quickly it's leaving skid marks?
I don't know.
I had a guy, and I swear to God, I was at Mastercuts 2 weeks ago, and I had a new guy. And I had a little bald spot when I went in, but he butchered me so bad that the back of my head is almost completely shaved, like a friar tuck kind of thing. And he kept, he was using a clippers and he kept like bumping my head with the clippers. You know how they're supposed to kind of go, I'm gonna do something you're not supposed to do with your mic. They kind of go like that right across your hair. He kept going.
Right.
He kept going with the fucking clippers. He kept bopping my head with the clippers. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to have even hair back there because he kept ramming with me the damn things.
So you got a haircut like the Bayou Tapestry. Have you ever seen the haircuts on the Bayou Tapestry?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things historically is that like the French, the Normans had the weirdest haircuts in the 12th century where they would get rid of the back of their head hair. And it's like, so you, if, a fun tip for everybody that's currently near a computer, go Google Bayou Tapestry and look at the Normans haircuts because that's that cut that you'll get at Master Cuts in Philly with sitting next to Brad Geiger. On that note, hi everybody and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I am Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, how are you doing?
I am doing well. We got one offer on the house so far.
Really?
All you need is one. So we're doing what's called the counter right now, and so we're going to see how that goes. So fingers crossed.
So now the offer comes in, and if you're countering, that means it came in lower than what you wanted, right?
Yes. Well, the bigger concern for us is that the timeliness of the escrow. So it's more and more a question of timing is the bigger issue. Mm. You know, sometimes when people buy, they say, hey, I need 45 days. Sometimes they're like, I want it right away. Oh. Sometimes they're like, we want to buy it, but we're not ready for 2 months, that kind of thing. So the escrow can move around.
So your counteroffer has more to do with time.
Right. Yeah. And as Captain Picard told us, time is the fire in which we burn. I think Captain Picard corrected that comment and said, time is a friend that walks with us through life.
I believe he did, as a matter of fact. Was that before or after he played his little flute?
Well, Brad, he was alone on that starship, so I don't know when it was that he played his little flute. Captain Picard, unmarried man.
Oh, man, poor guy.
Poor guy with his little flute. Oh, man. I never really thought about that. Captain Picard alone by himself at night. You know, you've done your mission. You saved the Vulcans. They're back on the ship. Oh, there's no Mrs. Picard. It's just little Picard by himself on his ship with his very big captain stateroom, having his tea.
Earl Grey.
Now I'm sad for Captain Picard.
And your thoughts start to drift into these weird little places that you go when you're all alone, like, I'm a Frenchman, but I've got a British accent.
Why do I always have to tug at my shirt every time I stand up? We're in the future and no one has figured this out yet.
How come Riker's always putting his feet up on things? What was that all about?
Why did we have Troy in that weird skirt in the first season?
No, I didn't question that one at all. you could put her into a sackcloth. That would have been just fine.
So for the people that aren't familiar, we have a Patreon that backs up this podcast at patreon.com/comiclab. And one of the levels affords you the ability to send in audio questions, which is super fun because you get to hear people in their own voice.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, here is question number one.
Hey, Brad and Dave. This is Dave Slusher. I wanted to hear you guys talk about what happens when you have a collaborator and you may just have different levels of investment. Somebody is really, really into it and somebody is not. And how do you kind of get people on the same page? Thanks a lot. Love the show. Bye.
Ooh, that's a
tough one. Is a good one.
There's nothing you can do about it. You've got two choices. Find a different collaborator or go off and work on your own because you are never going to make the other person care about this as much as you do. It's like any other relationship. Every now and again, you're going to luck into that one relationship where you both care equally. Or you might care a little bit more about one aspect of it and they might care a little bit more about another aspect, and you balance out. That I've seen that happen too. But you're never going to get a situation automatically where both parties care equally. And you can't make another person care more about something than they already do. So you have, in my opinion, zero options. You either put up with it, learn how to deal with it, or find a different collaborator.
Well, okay, that's all super true. But I would also say there's a fourth option, which is to sit down and communicate with them. I mean, that's the other option. Wouldn't you say? You have to say, listen, what's going on with you? What are the reasons why you are not feeling this as much as I am? Or I'm sensing that you were excited about this a year ago, and now you're not excited about it now. What can we do? What can I do to make sure that you are into this, that your buy-in is just as big as my buy-in, and that we're going forward hand in hand?
You're right.
Now, that might not change anything. But at the very least, if you're a savvy person, at the end of that conversation, you can go, oh, great. Well, if I tinker with a couple things, or, oh, great, they were just upset about the way we had structured this. Or you may go, oh, shit, they're super checking out. And now I know that for a fact. And I've got to look at Brad's first three options because option four is not working.
And option four should be your go-to first. In all reality, you know, you definitely want to give a chance to rule out that this is something that can be easily addressed. Just go in with your eyes open, because in my opinion, what's going to happen much more frequently is you're going to get a lot of excuses and a lot of promises, and you're going to find yourself right back at this same place in, you know, 3 weeks or 3 months. But that's not to downplay what Dave said. Give the communication a chance. But be realistic about what you're hearing, because, you know, we've all been in this situation, and what's much more likely to happen is that you're just going to get an excuse or a promise. You know, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to get right back on the horse. Life's been tough lately, and it's been throwing me a lot of curveballs. I've been really busy, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you're very likely going to be back in the same place. However, if it is something that is easily addressed by a genuine conversation, yeah, don't not do that step. That's tough. But by all means, communicate first before you cut the person loose.
Don't be like the lead barber at Mastercuts and just go to the relationship.
Exactly. Don't ram him in the head with a number four clippers.
That's right. But so I have a couple thoughts, Brad, to build off of your excellent points. And one is that you are listening to two people that actively chose a lifestyle where they have to rely on no one else but themselves. I mean, we are two guys that had many talents, all of which could have involved other people, but we chose the career path where it's like, nope. As an example, when I first moved to LA, I did sketch comedy and improv all the time, and I loved it. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
But trying to get five people together, at the creative people living different, you know, weird lives that creative people live, trying to get them just a schedule, never mind do it, just to schedule it, was an hour discussion every week. Yeah. And so that was my early lesson as to why rock bands break up, because, I mean, you tell me, the Beatles on paper could have produced another 20 albums, all of which would have been number one hits, but they broke up, and they broke up because somebody didn't want the exact same things as the other people did.
Yeah.
Is the short version. And so if that can happen to the greatest band of the later 20th century, then it can happen to you and your writer on your comic, or you and your colorist, or you and your inker, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this goes into a bigger point that, and it's actually a point that I have wanted to talk about on Comic Lab, Brad, which is we talk a lot about the self-actualization and building your own career and doing this. But we all of us walking in creative spheres have another friend who's an artist that, even if they're not a partner with, you see them not working very hard. And yet they say they're working very hard, but you know in your heart, they're like, yeah, I did a half a comic last month. And the thing that I've learned, and it was a hard fight in my 20s and 30s and 40s, and it's even hard today because they want to do it for them, but you can't want it for someone else more than they want it for themselves. And that echoes Brad's brilliant point that he made at the beginning about partnerships, is that you can't want it for them more than they want it for themselves. And if they don't have that fire, and maybe you didn't notice it at the beginning of the partnership, or maybe the fire was there and it faded, you know, people are changeable like the weather, but you can't want it more than they want it. And that's the crux of why Brad feels pessimistic about how this looks for you.
Yeah.
Because you can't change that for them as much. And I tried a lot in my 20s. Certain artist friends of mine that had the chops, I mean, they were good and they were going to either do it in acting or comics or writing. And no matter what I did to encourage them, they couldn't find it in themselves to get the work done. And you can't want their career for them more than they want their career.
And there's nothing more disappointing than that, right? Than to see somebody who really could do it. Like, on one hand, you've got this person that could do it, and all they need to do is get out there and work for it, or you know, focus a little bit, you know, upload the work. And then on the other hand, you've got somebody who's just dogging it out and working their butts off, but they just don't have what it takes yet. Because again, speaking and the theme of today's show, time, it's a continuum. They're going to get there at some point if they keep going and if they really focus. But in the now, this other person just doesn't have it. It's the exact opposite. You can't give them the skill or the talent, even though they want it enough for both of us. You take a look at both of these people and say, if I could just mash you together, it'd be a great thing.
Right. Because I think your and my hallmarks, Brad, as cartoonists, is that, I'll just speak for me. I'm not the most talented cartoonist in the world, but in my 20s, boy, I would out-hustle most anybody in terms of work, you know, just plugging away at it. Was I the best? Oh, God, no. I'm not even close to being in the top 30,000 at this point. But it angers me when I had a friend in my 20s or 30s that had the talent. And if anything, some of them were better than I was, but they just didn't have the fire in their heart to do it. And now they're in a job that they don't love, and but because they muddled through, you know what I mean? It was like more video games or more movies or more going out and partying, and it was not doing the work, you know, and it bummed me out to no end.
Frustrating.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, obviously this goes into a wider picture of, you can't necessarily fix other people's lives for them. They have to want it. You know, they'll take the help if they want it, but they got to want it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so as far as partnerships go, my advice to you is what Brad and I have done, which is to live in a corn silo in Kansas, don't talk to other human beings, and then upload via satellite to your website. Yeah. I think Brad and I have both found – Brad's about four farms down from me. Yeah. His silo is a little nicer, but it has worked great for us.
My silo is considerably bigger.
I am very often playing my Captain Picard flute.
By the way, everything you said does speak for me. I'll co-sign all of that, because there's something you said in an earlier show where you said, I will out-hustle a problem. And when you said that, it was like I so identified with that, because again, same thing. I don't have the amount of skill or the amount of talent, whichever you happen to believe in, and they're two very different things. I don't have that to the nth degree. But what I do have is the determination to work my ass off until that problem is licked. I will right. completely outrun any problem that comes down the pike with whatever amount of talent or skill that I've got. You know, but again, that's something you cannot bequeath onto somebody.
Yeah. But I will say the counterpoint of this, because it will happen a couple times in your career. When you do find someone whose energy and skill and talent and enthusiasm and friendliness and professionalism matches yours, latch onto them and do that project with them.
Yep.
And enjoy it while it's lasting, because that's exactly what happened when I made Stripped, the documentary film that I made. Fred Schroeder, who I made it with, is not only a delightful human being, but his optimism, his knowledge of comics, his enthusiasm for the project, his ability to work the problems when they came up, matched my own. And like Brad said, we didn't have matching skill sets, but they complemented each other. Mm-hmm. And so that was a friendship and a partnership that I dove into, as is true with Brad and I with Comic Lab.
Yeah.
Both Brad and I have a natural optimism and giggliness, and we enjoy working together, and it's fun to talk comics, and we both have a passion for it. And so this is one thing that's been percolating, frankly, in the back of our brains for a couple of years, is to get back doing this, because we missed it, because we found that we had a similar enthusiasm and energy for it. And so when you do find those people, you got to latch onto them. But it's kind of the thing that you'll get savvier as you get older about when you've found someone who's unique like that.
Yeah.
Because they don't come around every day. Out of the hundreds of cartoonists that I met, I could only do the film with Fred Schroeder. And out of the hundreds of cartoonists that I met, I could only do Comic Lab with Brad. So so it's rare is what I'm getting at. Yeah. You know, and it's different for every person. But they do exist. Those partnerships can exist. They do exist. And even though the Beatles broke up, they had a lot of good years there.
And they made a lot of good music.
They made a lot of good music until things fell apart.
You're bringing us right to a second question, though, which you know we're going to get, because it's one of the top 10 questions in this thing that we do. So we might as well take a swing at it now. And that is, how do you find a good collaborator? Because that's what everybody's looking for. There's a lot of people who know that they're good writers and they know that they're not very good artists. And there's a lot of people who know that they're good artists and they know they're not really great writers. How do those two people, how do those two types find each other?
I think the short and simple answer is you have to put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's both online and in person at Comic Cons or at cartoonist meetups. So the three that immediately spring to mind is there will be places where cartoonists aggregate online. And that could be either at Comics Reporter or Fleen or Robot, whatever that thing's called. But anyway, or Fleen, or there's spots on Reddit, or there's spots on all sorts of chat rooms. Make yourself known, introduce yourself, in a non-creepy way. Share some of your work, and you will find that people, it does take time, it's not an immediate thing, but people online will start to chat with you about this or that project. And then the other two that I would mention are Comic Cons, mm-hmm. where you can, you're obviously not going to click with a professional who's selling at a table who's very busy, but there will be meetups and you'll find panels at every Comic Con for newer cartoonists or newer writers or people that want to meet up and talk shop. So that exists. And then the third one I would say are local cartoonist meetings. And these are more prevalent if you're in a bigger city like New York or London or LA, where either the National Cartoonist Society or the Australian Black and White Club or the British, I don't remember what the British one's called. So either the NCS or the American Association of Editorial Cartoonists or something like that, drop in and meet some cartoonists and talk shop. It's a good way to meet them.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts, Brad?
What you're saying is right on the money, and that is you need to get out there and move around a little bit. It's not going to be as simple as placing a classified ad somewhere, you know, single white writer in search of, you know, Lonely Hearts artist. You know, it's going to be something that
tired of playing flute on Starship.
but no, I would even suggest, and I'm spitballing here. So tell me what you think, because it's something that I'm thinking of as we're talking. But if you were a writer, wouldn't it be great to have a couple stories in your back pocket and have not the whole thing, but like a page written out? And go through Artist Alley and find somebody working in the style that you really like and strike up a conversation. Talk to this person about your story. And if they seem amenable, leave them with a page so they can see maybe what it's like to work with you. In other words, the biggest problem that I would have as an artist is like, what's it going to be like working with this writer? You know, are they going to be able to communicate clearly? Can they write a comics script, or are they just going to say, "Well, I want, you know, just send me this dense paragraph that I've got to somehow translate." And same thing if you're an artist, walk around, because you will find people who are writers of comics up and down Artist Alley. And go through with your portfolio and say, and drop them off a little something. Say, I'd love to work with you sometime. Here's my portfolio. I wouldn't leave the entire script with somebody just because I'm not a trusting sort of person. But I would leave a little something here and there and go through a few conventions and see who you meet. I think that would be a much better way to try and find a potential collaborator. And as you're going through this, realize that this person you're collaborating with is not going to be a life partner. This is going to be a relationship that lasts for a certain amount of time. But you're not looking to build an entire life with this person. If it happens, great. But take it project by project. And when you're working with a project with this one person, be already kind of playing the field, for lack of a better verbal idiosyncrasy. Be out there and looking for your next project with somebody else, because what's going to happen is over a long length of time, you're going to find somebody that you really like working with who also really likes working with you. But
yes,
you've got to constantly be putting things out in different directions and not thinking that the one person that you're collaborating with right now is going to be there in 20 years. Chances are they're not.
I was going to say, Brad, this is all Brad Geiger's elaborate way of saying that Comic Lab is done. the project had a good run. He was trying to be obscure about it, but it's fine.
It
I
fun.
Get it.
It was fun. But me and Kevin McShane are starting a new podcast next week. That's going to be called Lab Comics. And I hope, Dave, that you'll be a Patreon backer, because we've got some great things planned.
Delightful. Oh, that delighted me, Lab Comics. Yes. No, but Brad, your point is right on. I couldn't say it better. That was right on point. That you've got to be prepared for, and you've got to approach them as the project friendship, not the life. And friendship is not even the right word. The project relationship, not a life relationship.
Well, yeah, that's I used way too many like romantic, like playing the field and life partner. And part of that is because there's a lot of those kind of overtones, but relationship. It is a relationship.
And so part of that is because I see this happen a lot. It doesn't happen to me much anymore, but I remember this happening in my 20s when writers or other artists would pitch me on a project. They would pitch me on a project, but they would also cage it in the, and this is all copyrighted, by the way. This is all copyrighted. So I've got all this, by the way. And I even remember in my 20s thinking, what a weird way to start a relationship. Yeah. That you're immediately. So just so you know, no one's trying to steal your ideas out there for the most part, unless they've got really nice Italian shoes on at Comic-Con and they're buying projects for Hollywood. Don't worry about the average artist trying to steal your ideas.
You know, it's time to run away when they start laying out multiple cell phones on the table to show you all the cell phones they've got.
What? Why is that a thing?
Did I never tell you that story?
Oh, I know. What is this?
This was a meeting at McCormick and Schmick's for an entity that will remain nameless, but I'll tell you off the air because you know
exactly what I'm talking about.
And he was trying, and it was one of those things he was trying to get me to sign. It was one of those, online syndicate type of things. And he was trying to get me to sign. And as he was talking to me, he starts pulling out. He must have had 6 or 7 different cell phones. And because he was very important. And if somebody couldn't reach him on one cell phone, they could always get to the other. And then there was a cell phone that was only for this certain type of people. And for some reason, they had just signed. And this was supposed to really impress me. They had just signed Tila Tequila. And he had her on a direct line. And oh, my God, it was the most bizarre lunch meeting I ever took.
That is 6 shades of crazy is what that is.
Yeah. And we ate the entire lunch with all of his cell phones out on the table.
All 8 of you had lunch together. That's amazing. You and a Samsung and an iPhone 2.
And not a one of them rung ever.
Oh, wow. So not only – so that's either two things. That's either 6 shades of crazy or, Brad, you were talking to a drug dealer. Brad, that's what you were talking to. That was not a man that ran a comic book company that's based in L.A. that I now know who you're talking about. That was a drug dealer. Do you like that I reverse engineered and know who you're talking about? that's amazing. Also, that just sounds like, I mean, who has burner phones? That's like somebody that has 4 passports. Like, why do you have burner phones?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. He had more burner phones than Frank Underwood.
Oh, geez. We might as well just say it. It was Paul Manafort, everybody. Paul Manafort was pitching Brad on his comics project. And he had already lined up Tila Tequila for, let's say, a separate project.
Yeah, let's say.
But there's a reason. Anyway.
Wow. Well, shall we go on to our next audio question,
please,
Bradley?
I think we've murdered this one. But yeah, let's because the next one I'm really anxious to get into.
Hey, guys. My name's Kara Hinton. So my question is, if I have two comics, one that's freely distributed and one that's Patreon exclusive, am I going to run into trouble if I ever want to collect the exclusive comic and package it up as a book or an ebook to sell to non-patrons? My initial instinct is yes. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Well, first of all, I have to say, I'm really loving that our first two audio questions both end with love the show.
Yeah.
I think that's a key point. I think that's can't be emphasized enough. Butter up the host.
That's right.
Brad, you have a particularly good take on this question.
He said your initial instinct was yes, and your initial instinct is wrong. It's 100% wrong. But I want to talk about why it's wrong. Okay. So first things first, let's clear this out. Your Patreon backers are not going to expect the print collection of the book. And as a matter of fact, they're going to be thrilled when you do something similar to what Dave just did this week, which was give Patreon backers an exclusive opportunity to get in on the Kickstarter early and maybe a little discount, but not a free book. They're going to be thrilled to get an early bird discount. And that's the root of all that is that it's the difference between running an exclusive content Patreon and a tip jar Patreon. And this is what I want to talk about. You've got to know which you're doing. Okay. In a tip jar Patreon, you are kind of thinking in terms of a charity. And if you're a charity, you want to do anything you can to make your backers happy. And if that means giving them free stuff like a tote bag or a coffee mug and this and that, then that's what you give them. You give them everything. You give them the farm because they're backing you. And I'm not saying that that's a bad way to do things. I'm not saying that derisively at all, but that's how it's done. A subscription Patreon, on the other hand, it's a business transaction. If you pay X, you get product Y. And what you're offering on Patreon is exclusive digital comics. You're offering the first look at these comics in digital form when they come out. You are not offering anything more than that. If you decide to take that stuff and package it up and put it out in a print collection, not only are your backers not going to be upset, they're going to be the ones lining up at the door to be the first ones to buy that print collection. I guarantee you. And especially if you do, like I said, Dave just did this, and this was something that was made available to Comics Lab backers as well. He did a quiet open of his Kickstarter for, what was it, Dave, the first 24 hours?
First 16, for reasons I'll talk about in a second.
Good.
But yeah, 16.
First 16 hours, and nobody got an announcement except for his Patreon backers, and those people got in the doors first, and they got an opportunity to snap up all of these discounts. And then after the 16 hours, the official opening went, and now he starts out his Kickstarter. I think, last time I checked, Dave, a sixth of the way to your goal in under 24 hours. Am I right?
That might be true if I knew math, Brad, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know what numbers mean.
I do know math, and it is a sixth. In fact, it's creeping up on a fifth. So put all of that at ease. Put your mind at ease. Your Patreon backers are happy to back you, and they're happy to get that comic digitally. They have no expectations after that. Now, I'm making a broad generalization. You may get one person, or you may get two people that say that they're upset that they expect the book. Then your job as a business person is to politely handle that and set them straight. And realize that with an attitude like that, they were never going to be backers of your Kickstarter in the first place. And they expect way more than you ever offered, and walk away. But handle it politely, handle it with kid gloves, but don't let it keep you up at night.
No, I think you're 100% right. The one thing that I would be curious to see is because he may have shot himself in the foot a little bit if his terminology on his Patreon
kind of promised or intimated or hinted that this exclusive would only appear on Patreon, which is something you want to avoid right. if that's the case. So I would clear that up, first of all. If that's anything that you're currently saying on Patreon, you just want to make it sure that any exclusives that are offered on Patreon are – it's clear that there are – or other venues that they might appear in down the road, like right. a book. And then secondly, I would just echo and push up what Brad said, that they're going to be, if anything, your Patreon backers are going to be your most excited audience for that Kickstarter book or for that book that mm-hmm. you're doing. And so Brad is 100% on point there. Part of this, I think, is you're feeling what all artists in some way feel about their art, which is that it's not worth getting paid for, or it's not worthy of getting paid for, and it's definitely not worthy of getting paid for twice.
Yeah, imposter syndrome.
Right. And so you're feeling, just so you know, it's not unnatural. This is a natural fear that you have, but you have to get over it because not only is your art worth getting paid for, it is the thing that keeps you making new art. And the market has already shown you, these Patreon backers have already shown you that they're willing to pay for it to keep it going. And so that lets you know in a sort of early market test that they will help pay to get a book made, which is any reasonable person understands is a separate undertaking. So allow yourself to have the confidence to ask for and receive money for your project because it is worth it. And that is what makes the art go, frankly. Yeah. So you've got to get past that imposter syndrome of I'm not worthy of getting paid in any way, shape, or form, and I'm not worthy of getting paid twice on the same art because it appeared on Patreon and then in a book because you are worthy of both. That sounded like such a Stuart Smalley thing. You are good enough. You are smart enough.
And doggone it, people like you.
That's right. But it is a natural fear, wouldn't you say? I mean, we've all walked a version of that road with our art at some point or another. Like, I feel guilty charging for this or doing that or
absolutely.
Selling this.
Absolutely. But it's something you've got to get over. And the sooner the better. And I'll just tell you from my own experience, I've been doing exclusives on Patreon for well over 2 years now. And at this point, I think most of my backers kind of understand that when I'm out promoting exclusives on Twitter and Facebook, that has a certain meaning. And later on, like I do a safe for work comic series based on mainstream comics called Cape Carnival. And those are all Patreon exclusives. Every now and again, I'll take one of those and I'll use it on the site, like during a vacation week, or I'll use it in a Twitter promotion, or I'll pop it up there on Instagram. I've yet to have a single Patreon backer say, wait a minute, I thought that was exclusive. They understand. they get what's going on here. They know that from time to time, I'm going to pull one of those and put it out there to entice more people to back the Patreon. At the end of the day, especially when you're dealing with Patreon backers, they're a lot nicer. They're a lot more understanding. They want you to succeed. That's the reason they're there in the first place. They genuinely, they're rooting for you. They're going to be, for the most part, the last people in the world to give you grief about something like this.
They're your super fans.
Absolutely.
So they're the ones that are your core audience. But I actually had an interesting thought pop into my mind, which is that complaints, as a cartoonist online or as an artist working online, complaints are read by your mind in the same way that pain is registered in your body. Yeah. And let me explain what I mean by that. My body is working 99.9% fine right now. I'm breathing, my heart's pumping, oxygen's moving around my system, I'm digesting, everything's good, right? But if I stub my toe or if I have a hangnail on what is essentially a semi-unimportant part of my body for core functioning, I will focus on that pain. Oh, yeah. And so translate that into the person that's complaining about your Patreon becoming your Kickstarter or whatever new move you did on your website or your site design change mm-hmm. or something you did with a character in your comic strip. 99.9% of your body, your audience, is working fine. They like it. They're willing to go with it. They're rolling with it. They support it. They love it. But you will focus on that one person, that one hangnail yeah. that's not critical to the whole system running because that's reading like pain to your system. Will there be one person that complains that your Patreon exclusives have gone to your book? Absolutely. Will your mind focus to your detriment on that one person the same way it focuses to its detriment on a hangnail or on a stub toe? Absolutely. It's just the way the human mind works as a difference engine. Mm-hmm. But should you let that win the day and not do the book because of that? Absolutely not. Because in the same way that your body is still pumping blood and still digesting, still arms and legs are moving, you can't let a hangnail stop your body, and you can't let one or two complainers stop your movement and your career. I am really proud of that visual metaphor, Bradley. That
is probably the best metaphor for that I've ever heard, and absolutely spot on. And listen, we want to go through life without ever getting a complaint. We want to go through life when everything is, everybody's in a constant state of cheerfulness. But that's the way a child looks at the world, right? We know that the more decisions that we make, the more people are going to second guess those decisions. And at the end of the day, when that comes up, your job is to simply clip the hangnail, bandage the toe, put ice on the scrape and move on and not to be completely obsessed with this little scrape. Handle it as politely, as honestly, as genuinely as you can. Realize that these things happen and move on. But take it from a couple of guys that have been doing this for a while now. The thing that you're worried about, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. I guess another way of saying it, if you want it in clinical terms, is just maintain proportionality. This one complainer, these two complainers are a tiny proportion of your audience to your overall body of fans. And so treat it with the proportionality that it deserves. Yeah. And don't let it consume your mind, even though your mind wants to focus on it in the same way that it focuses on pain or it focuses on a problem. Unless you're getting hundreds of emails within hours, most of your readers are fine with whatever decision you made. And you can't let the one or two squeaky wheels get the grease in this case, because you have to listen to your own heart about what your career needs and the next steps need.
Yeah. And it's something I tell my kids all the time is to consider the worst case scenario. And if you can live with the worst case scenario, then you can make your decision. Right? Because the chances of it getting all the way to the worst case scenario is very, very light. And the worst case scenario is you make a decision and you get kind of the same kind of response the Patreon itself got when they did their service fees, right? If it gets to that point, you do the logical thing, the thing that Patreon did, and you say, oh, you know what? This was a bad move and I am going to compensate for it. All right. And Patreon's still around. I'm sure Jack Conte was popping Rolaids like crazy that week, but he survived. he's better for the experience. I'm sure, because you don't go through anything like that without learning an awful lot of good things that you can apply later. If that happens to you, you're not going to enjoy it in the moment, but you'll get through it.
Yeah, yeah. One of the wisest things I ever heard Rich Stevens of Diesel Sweeties say, and this is relatable to all of our audiences, is that he said it would take tens of thousands of people choosing to fire me on the same day for me to lose my job.
Yeah.
And so when you keep that sense of proportion that, yeah, you might have a complainer today or you might even have five complainers tomorrow, but it's not 10,000 people all firing you on the same day. And if, as Brad said, you do have 10,000 people firing you on the same day like Patreon had, then you go, whoa, 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 shit. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Oh, I've messed up.
We've heard you.
Yeah, we've heard you. My favorite term would be, we listened. it's another version of you can't let one jerk ruin the joys you want in life.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know what, too, is that one of the nice things that Brad said is treat it with politeness, treat it with kindness when you respond to them and say, I'm sorry this didn't work out. Maybe we'll meet again on a different day and we'll find a better path together, that kind of thing. And here's what happens more often than not. When you respond with kindness and politeness and professionalism, you very often get an email back saying, I'm sorry. I reacted in a heated way and yep. I didn't like that. So very often that's the case. I would say that's 60 to 70% of the emails back, right? Let's say 50. Let's say 50% of the emails back is, you know what? I'm sorry. You're right. I acted like a jerk.
Or they'll say this, I'm surprised you even responded. I'm so happy that you even wrote.
Right. And then you realize that a lot of people online are just trying to poke the bear just so they get a response. They just want human interaction, you know?
Well, and not only poke the bear, but here's another interpretation. You're so used to, if you send like a complaint to Amazon or Google or at any number of different places that you do business with online, you're going to get a pre-recorded, pre-scripted robot response. The fact that you took the time to offer a genuine back and forth, here's you know where I am, and I'm hearing you, and I understand. Here's where I am. It looks like we've got an honest difference. Just the very fact that you did that is going to be worth so much to that person. I guarantee it. Because it doesn't happen all the time.
It doesn't happen, yeah. And then so the 50% of the people respond right back right away going, oh gosh, you're right, I'm sorry. But then the most gratifying one that I get is when 6 months later I get an email back that says, hey, Dave, I'm real sorry. I was going through a divorce at the time or I had just lost my job or there was a death in my family and I was a jerk. And because, my God, that's all of us at one point in our life where we're just like – someone just died in your family and also your cable is out. So by God, the cable company is going to hear it from you, you know? Right. And so I guess what I'm getting at is that if you respond professionally, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a response that's actually okay when you respond kindly and politely. Yeah. And then the other 10% of people, fuck them. You know, that's what are you going to do? Some people just complain.
Some people are always going to be upset.
Oh, God, that's true. Some people literally like to go through life angry, as though anger is the only emotion that feeds them living this life. You know, it's weird, but yes. So for those 10% of humans that enjoy and swim in anger, then there's only so much you can do. Yeah, you know,
you got to let it go.
You just got to wash your hands of them.
Listen, since we're talking about Patreon, we've got a question from another Patreon backer who wrote in their question, and it fits so well here. I thought maybe we'd try to tackle it real quick while we had some time. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. So Mark writes, when starting a new comic online, oh, that's something I hadn't noticed there, the word new. And I've read this over a few times, so let's underline that. When starting a new comic online, is it even worth it to start a website anymore? Or should everything just be posted to Patreon?
My first thought is I love how Grandpa noticed the word new on the sixth reading there. That was great. That really made me smile on this end.
Whole new shine on everything. There's a whole lot there now.
So this is what it sounded like on my end. Well, now, hold on. Let me adjust my bifocals. I didn't realize he was talking about comic strips. Hold on. And the word new is in here? Oh, this is a totally different question than I thought the gentleman was asking before. I'm quite sure how to respond.
Let me adjust my bifocals.
Margaret, come in here and help me with this question. I thought this man was asking about animal husbandry for horses, and it turns out he's asking about comic strips. I read this completely wrong.
Oh, shucks.
Oh, my gosh. I got an aw shucks out of you. Wow. That's the boy in Minnesota right there. Got an aw shucks.
So what do you think? Give this guy some advice. Stop picking on me. Give him some advice.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just loved that moment. So my advice is that platforms and social media and distributed fundraising, whether it be Kickstarter or Patreon, will come and go. And speaking of as an old man in this situation, I have seen many changes online. In fact, everything that I know changes almost regularly within 18 to 24 months online. And so platforms come and go, social media comes and goes, distributed fundraising will probably come and go, although at a slower pace. And so you always, at least in my opinion, you always want to maintain some central hub to which you can point your readers to either new projects that you're doing in very different venues or different social media aspects, different fundraising aspects, different publishing aspects. So for me, the website is still central. And I know that that is increasingly less important to teens and 20-somethings who, for whom the wide web is not as important as platforms. But I think it is still a key part of your business. And so I would recommend maintaining it.
I couldn't say that better myself. You are 100% correct. You want one place on the web where you have complete control. Because if Patreon decides tomorrow that they don't like you or they don't like the sort of thing that you do, and they flip the light switch off on you, you've got no control over that. Same thing, by the way, for Facebook and Twitter. You know, there, you see a lot of people, well, Burke breathed when he brought Bloom County back. He didn't start a website. He just started a Facebook group, right? Don't agree with that. If tomorrow Facebook for some reason isn't working or something happens, and I know it's hard to believe that that could happen, but listen, you guys, there was this thing before Facebook. It was called MySpace, and everybody thought that was going to be around forever too. And you don't even know what it is today.
Right. And before Reddit, there was Dig. And before Dig, there was, you know, like you can go back with any one of these.
Stumble upon.
Yeah. God, I remember that one. Yeah.
I can go old school on you. That all this stuff is transient.
Exactly. And even to Brad's earlier point, too, is that even if they stick around, even if Facebook is still here for another 10 or 20 years, their content policies might change. And you might say, well, it's a First Amendment thing. I can say what I want. And the answer is no, not on on a private platform. Your First Amendment rights are specifically for public platforms in the public sphere, where the government is not allowed to tell you that you can't say this or that. But a private company on a private platform can tell you whatever the heck they want.
Right.
So if you have a political position they don't like, if you have a culture or lifestyle position that they don't like, if you go against their own policies, like if you're making a comic about Facebook on Facebook, they could, for every reason that you can imagine, shut that down. So when you have your own site, you keep a backup position, and frankly, a central position that private companies can't limit. Yep. And I think so both for the fact that they could go belly up for a billion reasons, or both for the fact that they could maintain or manage your content in a way that you don't like, I would keep the centralized website going.
And there's also something else going on there too. And that is this. Patreon is great. I'll stand second to nobody in my admiration of what Patreon has done for independent creators. But their discoverability numbers are not great. Kickstarter has great discoverability. And this is what I mean, in case you've never heard me use that term before. When I do a Kickstarter, I will find that between 10 and sometimes 30% of the people that back that project never heard of me before, discovered me through Kickstarter. That's huge. And that's probably why Dave did that early Kickstarter rollout for his Patreon backers. But I got a feeling we're saving that for pro tips.
Oh, gosh. No,
that was my hint. I want you to save that for pro tips. That's worth a $5 Patreon pledge right there. But listen, discoverability on Patreon is not huge. You do not want to limit yourself just to posting this thing on Patreon and trying to point a different traffic to it. You want a place on the web where you can control. You can control your archives. You can repackage your archives. You can decide how you're presented. Again, I love Patreon. They are not built for visual artists. All right. If you click on a tag, it shows you the tag in newest to oldest order, and there's no way to flip that order, which, by the way, is the most commonplace command on every website, say, going back to MySpace and before. Why they can't do that, I have no idea. I've been after them about it for years now. But if I put a comic storyline in there, pages 1 through 12, it'll go 12, 11, 10, 9. Nobody wants to read the story like that. If they want to read that story, they want to read it 1, 2, 3, 4. I can't control that on Patreon, but I can control that on my website. And now that Patreon released their API and there's Patreon plugins that work with WordPress, very shortly, you're going to see people displaying their exclusive Patreon content on their private websites that can be unlocked with Patreon backers. And then you're going to see the whole doors blown open on what webcomics and crowdfunding can do together. But that all involves you having your own website, having a place where you can control how your stuff gets out there.
And then I 100% agree with that. The only button I would add to that is, from that base of operations, from that webcomic website, we do live in a world where you kind of have to post it to 9 other places as well. So that doesn't, my advice does not mean that you're pulling back from Instagram or Twitter or Reddit or Facebook or anything else. It just means you want that central core base, and then you're putting it up on all those other social media and distribution sites as well.
Let's not even stop there. I'm going to put a button on your button. If you're going out on Twitter and Facebook and pointing back to your website, you're doing it wrong. If you're posting the first panel of a 4-panel strip and you've got to click on that to go back to your website, you're doing it wrong. You post that whole thing on Twitter. You want them to read the whole thing on Twitter. You're always going to direct them back to the website when there's something important going on, but you got to get their attention on the Twitter feed first. And I see it's like, I was telling Dave, it's one of these Niagara Falls things where I keep seeing it. It makes me crazy. You do not use social media the way we used it way back in the day to direct traffic to your website. We're not making ad money anymore. There's no reason to do that. You need to put that whole comic out there. And like Dave said, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, any place you can get it out there. But you're not directing traffic back to that website, but it doesn't mean that the website isn't important either.
I don't want to brush this under the table, by the way, but Brad very nonchalantly just made a Three Stooges reference to Niagara Falls, which is the most amazing reference. He buried the lead on how great a reference that was, but if you have not seen the Three Stooges sketch with Niagara Falls, it is one of the greatest bits of comedy writing ever.
My God.
And Brad just dropped that reference like it was nothing. That was great. I loved it.
That, yeah, I by the way, I agree. I think that's one of the, even if you're not a Stooges fan, that one, you will appreciate their brilliance.
Yeah, it was almost a little left of center from what they normally do, but God, it was funny. Niagara Falls!
Slowly I turned.
Step by step.
In fact, it was actually cerebral enough that you would almost consider it like more of an Abbott and Costello routine now that I'm thinking about it.
I was going to say it felt more like an Abbott and Costello routine than a Three Stooges, who were much more slapstick and physical comedy. But anyway.
Well, now we've gone deep baseball on this. Unless you have anything to add on this topic.
My only add on the topic is that I'm so glad that Brad found new discoveries while reading that question. That was delightful. Although I have to say, Brad, anytime you want to talk about animal husbandry, I'm happy to do it with you. That was great.
I'll bet you are. Well, in that case, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I have a Kickstarter that started today at newpugbook.com. That's newpugbook.com. But also I would be remiss if I said that the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab. And hey, don't forget, go out to iTunes, help us out. You guys are in the know on this stuff. You know how this works with the algorithms and all this stuff. Go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. You'll be helping us out a lot. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.